The yellow flag has been shown. The red flag is being taken away. The lights will go to red.
Away they go. Good start from Danny Pedrosa. Whenever he never says that. Here we go. Valentino Rossi had a good start.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 342 for Wednesday, the 24th of October, 2012. My name is Jim Race. I'm up in the Sierra Nevada of California, with Jules Gisek down in the Bay Area. Good evening, Jules.
Hey, Jim. How are you doing? I'm glad you're still alive.
I'm still alive. yes, no felons ran into me today. The weather's been really odd, but that's fine. It's about time we got a little bit of rain. Our weather's been kind of like jolly old for a bit. We got a cool show for you today. We've got a fair amount to talk about, frankly, because Sepang was a bit of a washout, wash-in. There's been a lot of news since then, obviously. We've got some great listener feedback. And so, Jules, I think we should probably dive right in. I wish I could announce some donors for the last couple of weeks. I missed it last week, but unfortunately, we don't have any. So if you'd like to help the show out, feel free to send us a few bucks, because even though things are starting to wind down in the season, we're trying to prepare for next year already.
Yep, we are. Before we get into the listener feedback,
Lord, what am I thinking? Pardon me, ladies and gentlemen. I have got some work to do here. Oh, solid.
All right. Actually, the first listener feedback is yours.
That's what. Oh, great! I get to play my own anti-herp, and a pronunciation too. Hopefully, I'll get right. Tony Ayanu. Tony, I hope that was close.
Hey, you know, Tony, why don't you send us a clip? You know, I met Tony he was a corner worker at Laguna Seca.
Okay.
He's the guy who lent me that killer lens.
Oh, nice.
He's
okay.
A photographer in Canada.
He is Thumb Photo.
Thumb Photo, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tony, why don't you just send us a little audio clip of how you pronounce your name, because I hate the fact that I don't know how to say it. It makes me feel horrible.
We could just call him Thumb Photo.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway.
Cool. If we had them for everybody, we'd just play them back audio-wise. You know, I'm surprised Doug Edmiston hasn't said West 1 already. Anyway, Tony says, he was saying, I don't like this one, Jules, but I'll do it. Sepang was the best chance for Jim Race's prediction of a CRT bike on the podium. I will disagree because there are still two races left, Tony. But the best chance so far for Jim Race's prediction of a CRT bike on the podium. If it didn't happen under these circumstances, it won't happen this year. And he says, sorry, Jim. All right, fine. We're not done yet. Following up with that, or carrying on, because Sepang had a bunch of stuff that we'll get into in a bit, Sheldon Gooby says, quick, someone get Josh Hayes to Australia. Well, we know...
He's not the only one. There's a lot of people that are saying...
There are thousands. Yep. There are thousands. But we know right off the bat, it was more than a few days ago that they said there really wasn't time. I know that Josh was in Daytona up until yesterday or the day before doing tire testing. Yeah. And then he's got a vacation schedule. He's heading off to tropical islands, leaving tonight or tomorrow.
However, we do know that Ben is done for the season.
You know, I haven't heard that for sure. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. So
yes, he has just posted an update, post surgery update. He's done.
All right. So,
which is really unfortunate.
It is.
He had a great race at Valencia last year. You know. Yeah.
But at the same time, that bike seems to want to kill him.
Yeah.
And so we know that they're not going to have a replacement rider for the Air Asia GP in Phillip Island. But at the same time, it would be great to, if possible, somebody else that also had a great race last year at Valencia would be to get Josh Hayes out there. I agree. I think that would be cool. Can we make that happen? Well, we might have to make a little noise, and I think we might help along that thing. So, you know, if you'd like to get Josh Hayes to Valencia, feel free to write in, post on the Facebook fan page, post to Yamaha USA.
you do need to read your little sidebar quote.
Oh, yeah, this is a classic. This is a post from today. This one cracked me up. Henry Spies, he says, you know,
this is the father of Ben Spies.
He says, you know, everybody wants to get Josh onto Ben's bike. And Henry said, well, what? Don't you like him? And people were like, well, of course we do. And well, Henry wasn't referring to Ben. He was referring to Josh. Yeah. Oh, I mean, Josh, which is definitely pretty funny.
Classic.
Yeah, it is a classic. So, you know, there's a lot of people out there that feel that bike is a little bit cursed, born under some weird little sign. For Ben, you know, good deal for him. Obviously, he needs to heal up. He did go in for surgery. And so that's going to take some time to get back into shape. And
the list of damage to him was actually nasty. Like, you know, broken, cracked rib, bruised lung.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there were on a sidebar, and Jules, maybe it is too early to get into this, but I do want to, now that I've started, I'll say it.
Okay.
You know, Ben went down. We had guys dropping like flies in the GP race. And people were saying, well, Jorge tried to stop it early. Well, I think it's bullshit. Anyway, we'll get into that more, won't we?
Yes, we will. Definitely. Yes. I'm already salivating.
Well,
what you just said. All right, Mick Lumley wrote in, and he said that bit about riders' contracts expiring on the last day of the season. Wouldn't that? So last week we were talking about the fact that the official FIM ruling and Dorna's ruling on the end of the season is the last race of the season. The next season starts as that race weekend ends. Which is great because that's the way we want to see testing happen and all that kind of stuff. But Mick, along with other people, wrote in similar kinds of emails and posted on Facebook saying, you know, what about the contracts? And so he's saying that, you know, that the bit about riders' contracts expiring on the last day of the season, wouldn't that need Dorna to be organized enough to be able to say when the last race of the next two or three seasons are going to be so that the people who write up the contracts can put the right dates on them? And I think what's going to happen is probably these contracts aren't going to have dates. They're probably going to have a
season.
Yeah, they're going to literally say that you are signing for two seasons, not 2 years, but two complete, you know, seasons in this series. And the season is defined by the last, because what, you know, Dorna could have a date for that race, and then we could have a postponement. We've had that once before. It
right.
could happen, right? So, and, you know, lawyers hate that kind of stuff. So my guess is that they're just going to say that the last day of the season is defined by Dorna, FIM, whatever.
I think a little ambiguity, frankly, in contracts, we might talk about this some more in a bit,
yeah,
is probably warranted. Screw the lawyers. I'm sorry if you're a fan and you're a lawyer, nothing personal.
Yeah, screw you.
Yeah. Unless you're a MotoGP contract lawyer, and then I'd love to pick your brain and then buy you a beer, and then hopefully we'll still get along. Moving along. Should we, Jules? You want to head this one up?
Sure. Okay. Gary Shavit, long-time listener, writes in, I'm sure that this will be a major topic in next week's program. This is this week, I guess. Just remember that the kid is 17 years old. He's talking about, I believe, Maverick Vinales.
You think?
Mm-hmm. Yes, he's already made more money than all of us together will ever make in our lifetimes.
Not sure about
Damn
that.
Damn you. Yes, he must have had a lot of discipline to get where he is. Yes, he probably has managers and advisors, but remember the dumb things that any 17-year-old does every day. It's a very good point. It's funny because I actually... I see him as much younger than 17. So when I think of 17, I was like, oh, you know, 17-year-old, they're practically adults, you know.
But I mean, if you look at pictures from Marquez, like two years ago,
exactly,
I mean, they both look like children.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny what Paris Hilton could do to help you grow up.
Oh boy.
I'm sorry. That was my out loud voice, wasn't it? Excuse me. You know what? Let's
we may as well talk about this one. Because we could talk about this one, or do you want to wait till until we talk about Moto 3?
No, I think we should talk about this one, and I think what we should do is probably skip down to the announcement that occurred since then.
So first of all, for those who don't know, because you might only watch MotoGP, for example,
or
what happened in Moto 3
rock.
was that Maverick Viñales, he did come to Sepang to race.
Briefly.
He showed up, and then him and his dad left on Friday, I believe, Friday morning.
But not before talking with MotoGP.com.
Yeah, yeah. They left very upset. They said they were splitting with, well, there was a kind of a rapid fire press release. Maverick Viñales saying that he's splitting with the team, Bluesense team, because of, how do you put it? Do you remember exactly? It was a strange kind of...
I think the translation kind of didn't do it justice, but basically it was a combination of distrust, lies. They didn't feel the bike was going to be competitive enough to not only finish out the season, but for next year. But at the same time...
And you have to keep in mind that there is some... has to be some kind of fallout from Misano. Yeah. Was it Misano when his engine died on the outlap?
I'm going to say Aragon.
Oh, it was Aragon. Yeah. Okay. It was Aragon. That's right. He was Aragon and Misano, he raced and, I don't know. I mean, I just think that he was smoldering still from that, outlap.
Well, incident. I mean, I think there's other things too, because there are things that were talked about.
No, I know. But I'm saying like all of that stuff added together. What happened
it was the last straw.
Something was the last straw, definitely.
Yeah.
and so this garage was standing there open, and I remember I just happened to open Twitter on Thursday morning, my local time, and it was already or it was Thursday afternoon. It was already Friday morning over there when all this was going down, and it was just a Twitter feed was lit up about Viñales not being there. The team was saying, "Well, we're here if he wants to come back on his dime." That the bike is here, the crew's ready to go, and sure enough, the crew was there. The cameras kept going in there to show the bikes sitting around, the mechanics sitting around. You know, I mean, kind of wacky. Well, now. And you know, he basically said that he was going to sit out. And, you know, he has a 2-year contract with these guys. And he even went as far as saying, well, that's fine. I just won't race for 2 years. You know? Now.
Well, plus on top of that, then, okay, can I carry on for a bit?
Yes, please.
So the immediate speculation, there were several of them. One of the ones that I thought about going through FP1 even was... Well, he's under 18. He can't legally write a contract. Well, you know that the lawyers that we were talking about before make sure that there's provisions to make sure that that's valid, mm-hmm. or binding, if you will. There was some great commentary on the live feed, by the way.
Oh yeah.
But you know, the whole thing, Jules, it was weird. But then there were, you know, other things coming out that the team. So his manager is also the team manager for Bluesense, which is just flipping weird.
Yeah.
Well, it was, I should say. I doubt that's going to continue. I know that when he returns to Australia, he's heading down with his dad and a lawyer. And you remember I forwarded you the press release from Bluesense the other day,
yeah,
2 days ago. Probably the most terse press release that I've ever read, because it had a subject, but no body in it.
That's right.
I just cracked up. It said, Maverick Vinales will race at the AirAsia Grand Prix in Australia. That was the subject line. And then you go to, you scroll down to see what else is said. Nothing.
Yep.
Nothing. So things are not all tender and happy there. But before, actually, that email came out first, I believe, yes. the press release from Bluesons. And then following on that, Maverick Vinales put out a statement.
Which is, I think, just this morning, right? It's Wednesday we're recording the show.
Yeah. This morning or yesterday?
This morning, but yeah.
Yeah. Close enough to the race coming up, so we're trying to get this thing out for you guys. So here's what should I read the whole thing? I'll start off. He says, firstly, I would like to publicly give my sincerest apologies to those that were harmed or affected by my behavior in Sepang. I'm here to come forward, ask for forgiveness, and take responsibility for my mistakes. I've returned to continue fighting with my Bluesons Aventia team for the run-up spot in the championship. There are many people who deserve it, sponsors, technicians, and the fans. He does go on. And he does fall on his sword a bit.
And he finishes with, finally, I want to express my strong desire to amicably resolve all the problems with the team and to be able to concentrate on riding, which is what I really like.
Until the end of this year. Yeah. it doesn't say that there. No. This is certainly not over. I'm sure, is going to be some obviously long, long talks, perhaps not necessarily involving Maverick so much, but involving the more adulthood folks, and let him actually focus on preparing for riding at PI, which I think would be a good idea. I'm sure everybody's been properly briefed as to what his concerns are and whatnot. One of the things we did notice when this whole thing happened, and it was a bit of a shock to the paddock and media and everybody, they wanted to know what was going on, was a fair amount of former Bluesons riders came out very directly and publicly in support of Maverick's decision, because there were a lot of people saying he's a complete nut job for doing what he's doing. He's just being a kid. There's more to it than that.
Yeah.
And much more to it than that.
And didn't our old friend Eugene Laverty race with Bluesons?
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. In fact, we were there for his last race. Yeah. That was back in the Bob days. I think you got the final picture of his leathers hanging up in
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I've actually had somebody comment. I think his uncle commented on that from Australia or somewhere. And some of the stuff that I heard from there was kind of interesting. So the team has been in a bit of conflict and turmoil before, and certainly will be so probably in the future. They are one of those teams that are running in all three classes. That's a lot to ask. And a lot to ask from their riders, and certainly dealing with sponsorship money and all that is a big deal. So we'll have to see what comes out of it. This weekend should be interesting. I'm sure there'll be stories. I'm sure the media is going to be all flipping over them.
Oh yeah.
And if they were wise, they'd just shut up shop and shut up.
Well, and I mean, you know, so that's what media is.
That's true.
Yeah. And you know, going back to Gary's point, I mean, absolutely. We do have to give him a pass, but there was people that, you know, were complicit, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that could have given him a better advice. Maybe even, you know, said, no, just you're staying. I don't care. Like his dad could have just said, but like you said, there's more to this story. There's more to this story. And the people who are close to him probably know the story very well. And if they support his decision, they did it for the right reasons.
And on the other hand, it could have been his dad going, well, get the hell away from that team. And he's like, no, I want to win the world championship. I want to come in second.
Who knows? You're right.
Yeah, flip it around. I mean, who knows? Yeah.
Right. Mike Moynihan wrote in, and he had a bunch of comments about the towing rule. And so I just wanted to clarify what that really is about. It's not that there's people literally parking.
It comes really freaking close.
I mean, I gotta say, at Magillo especially, it was so evident, because that last corner, T14 going into the long straight, it's very slow. And what they would do is they would just kind of sit there, you know, just drifting. Yeah. Sometimes even putting a foot down.
Now, as a fast rider
comes through the corner, they would then speed up to racing speed, but because they weren't going fast to start with, the fast rider coming through the corner would pass them, and then they would tag on, you know.
If I was Mike Webb, I would say if you put a foot down, it's just like trials. That's like a point.
Yeah. Of course, they had to have sensors, and you know, then does that mean that Lorenzo lost a point later? Anyway,
yeah, they could electrify the track. Sorry.
All right. So, but the thing is that it's not that there's bikes, you know, because he was questioning like how could that ever actually happen. That kind of situation where the bikes are just sitting there waiting for somebody to pick up somebody. But this rule isn't about that. It's about tagging on to someone, creating a kind of like a traffic jam in a dangerous place. It's a specification of a particular rule, which is, you know, not acting in a dangerous fashion. And we've already had definitions of other types of situations where, you know, it's written down what that actually means. This is just a specification of that.
Right.
But it's really falls under the same umbrella of do not endanger other riders.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. I mean, you can go way back with this kind of stuff too. I mean, remember Melandri Biaggi collision. I forget where it was, I can't remember which one was like kind of slowing down, waiting for a tow. And in the end, Biaggi ended up nearly on the back of Marco's bike. somebody will remember that. But that was a case of somebody waiting for a bit of a tow.
Was this year?
No, this was back in GP, dude.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This was way back.
Because Biaggi was a practitioner of that actually.
Yeah, that was actually the race where Biaggi's uncle got thrown out
because he punched somebody.
The choking incident.
Yeah. That's right.
Somebody remind us of what that was.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody will.
Anyway, I also sent Mike an email. It's the same, about the same. But that's, you know, we're waiting for the rule to actually be in the book, and then I'll be very curious in how they state it. They're still working out the kinks of that one. It's a tricky one to do because there's a lot of you know, objectivism in there.
Yeah, well, and you've been talking to the race director and trying to get us some info on it, and they're still trying to iron it out. So yep. I think it's fine. They got to figure it out because it's a little bit weird.
Yep.
So, do you want to do Doug or should I?
I don't do Doug.
You don't do Doug? All right, I got to do Doug. Doug, insert audio clip of his last name here, writes in. excuse me. He says, why would we watch MotoGP over BSB when there's a clash? It's the same reason we walked back to the empty pantry expecting to see something different magically appear. Insanity is a bitch. Well, I get mine refilled, Doug. Anyway, on the Motegi contract, and this is kind of interesting, and I've got some thoughts about it too. He says, I have a feeling we'll actually not be seeing that contract last as intended.
Which is 2018.
Yep. The nuclear disaster in 2011 is going to rear its ugly head more and more every year. Background radiation levels were up 25% this year, though that's still very, 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 et cetera, small in terms of radiation levels. But each year, the groundwater levels are going to unfortunately be increasing. But isn't it on the coast, Jules? You'd think they'd kind of be washing it. Anyway, he says, hopefully I'm wrong and history doesn't repeat itself, but that's how major radiation leaks tend to go. This is on a conversation that you guys had last week, correct?
No. Well, we were just talking about the fact that there was a...
Yeah,
the continuing extension. That's it.
Yeah. This is the part I was like, what? He says, though, seeing as no one seemed to blink twice about going to Japan this year. All right. Brakes. Doug, did you forget? We had Stoner saying, no way am I going to go. We had Lorenzo saying,
no, he's
same.
Talking about this year.
Okay. Well, I mean,
in 2012.
Okay. But I think there were still people. Well, perhaps.
No, there were definitely people that had you know, concerns still, yeah. You know.
But he says managers will probably just hand over potassium iodide pills to riders and crew and claim it's some new super vitamin to help fight jet lag. I mean, there's still a lot of controversy around Motegi in Japan in general, but whatever. And then he's mentioned some BSB stuff. He said, what I've heard about Swan Yamaha was the lack of factory electronics as they weren't using, which helped so much. Well, at the same time, Doug, there was a pretty serious chassis change in the middle of the year. They were moved off of one that was semi-controversial onto definitely a factory chassis. But he says, spec ECU comes in, the Yamaha doesn't work as well as it does in full superbike trim. Okay.
It's kind of interesting because I mean, we did expect more from the team, but it didn't, it wasn't like the entire season sucked. Mm-mm. It definitely, there was definitely a turning point. I think maybe it was the, like you said, the chassis.
Yeah. Well, I think at the same time, I think teams are still kind of doing a couple of different things in BSB. They're settling into the new role structure, which may, you know, may change again. There's the meeting that's going to be going on very shortly with World Superbike. This is all in, you know, sort of the Dorna umbrella now, Jules. World Superbike and the National Series, several of them, including both BSB and AMA, I believe, to try and find some continuity in their rules so that there's a more obvious stepping stone or way of moving up. I think the Spanish Championship and the Italian one might also be involved. There's certainly the Spanish one with Dorna's involvement. So teams may have to change. In the same vein, before we get to the bit, this last bit here, we know that Team WFR in BSB, who did really well at the end of the season, although kind of tripped around a little bit, you know, this whole shootout thing that they have now at the end of the year, which is where they readjust the point structure with four or five races to go or five or six races to go. I think it kind of throws everybody for a loop. But we had Team WFR, who has Alex Lowe's and James Westmoreland, who did great at the end of the season, are bowing out for next year. And they're not just BSB. They're also a car racing team. So not necessarily just money, but there is still money issues that are going on. And so it kind of, you know, kind of tweaks everything. You know, the AMA season is long over now with the final race being done, but we still don't know what really is going on there. But we kind of think of BSB as probably the healthiest national race series right now. I think that everybody kind of be in agreement on that as far as...
Well, CV is doing pretty damn well.
Yeah, but I mean, you get... True. But I mean, as far as world exposure.
Oh, yes.
I think a lot of people look to BSB as...
Very true.
Yeah, and there's guys from internationally going through BSB to try and get these days to...
I think if you took the percentage of riders in BSB that are not British, it'd be much higher than in any other series.
Yeah, very true.
Versus the locals, you know.
Right.
Like the Spanish Championship is like probably like 99% champion Spanish.
Yeah, a goodly portion. I agree.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see what happens. That's the first one that I've heard of. It's a little bit early to hear about it. I think there's. But then again, that is a series that also goes through a lot of flux in the off season. We'll have to see, you know, and during the season, frankly, you've seen guys move around a lot. We'll have to see. Where do we go from here, Jules?
We're going to Australia in a few days because Motopod is going to have a presence.
We will. We might have a pseudo dual presence. Might have had a triplet presence if it all worked out. But Gonzalo Silva, who you guys haven't heard from in a while, probably. He has moved from Portugal to Australia, did some time ago. Went down there to be with some smart girl. and then promptly refell completely in love and disappeared off the face of the planet. Occasionally seen climbing up a rock.
right.
Well, he has reemerged from under said rock and is, as we speak, he was in Sydney today, was he not?
I didn't catch his updates.
I think he was. He's close enough to Cowes, where he's going to be staying, to be there very shortly. In fact, frankly, he's probably thinking about right now. He may be at the track, Jules, as we speak. And So the short answer is Gonx is going to be there for us this weekend. We're also going to have an opportunity, and we'll do this as time permits and as often as possible, to talk to Mr. Mark Brax, Braxy, who has gracefully volunteered to join us a little bit this weekend and give us his wonderful perspective. And I always love talking to Braxy.
Oh, yeah.
I was tempted to see if I could get him to join us this evening, but it could have been a 7-hour call. not that I would have minded that. I love talking to Mark. So we should have a plethora of good stuff for you guys next week. And in that spirit, there's a meetup coming up together, isn't there, Jules?
There is. Gonzalo has designated the area behind the Gardner Strait stand. On Saturday at 1 p.m. for a Motopod meetup. We've gotten a couple of emails from people, so we know there's going to be people showing up. There will be a link in the show notes with a photo of the track map with Gonzalo's little pen marks on where the actual meetup is. So that's check that out in the show notes.
And Gonx has our Australian flag stickers, guys.
Yeah. So he's got some goodies to hand out.
Yep.
And hopefully we'll get a couple of people to maybe take a picture. Don't forget if you go, we want photos.
Yeah, and not that they actually sell the swill that I tend to drink here on the show, but if they've got a Foster's down there, feel free to tip one for me.
Nice.
Talk a bit about Red Bull GP of the Americas at COTA.
Well, I mean, all I wanted to say was that it's been named. Mm-hmm. That's the official name now, Red Bull GP of the Americas.
Yes.
Plurally, which I think basically is kind of an acknowledgement that there will be no Argentina around, which we knew that it was really between those two. Yes, it's the GP of the Americas. So now we've got a Red Bull USGP, which is the Laguna round. We've got the Red Bull Indianapolis GP, which is the Indy round. And we've got the Red Bull GP of the Americas, which is the Texas round. Secret of Americas round.
I'm confused. there's a lot of people who don't think the USA should have three rounds. These are people from outside the US. And I think I've got some sympathy for that. Because it's not the biggest sport. It's not the biggest sport here. Certainly not compared to the enthusiasm that we get at some European rounds. But I'm hoping to see that change. It will be cool to see what. It will be interesting to see what COTA can do, because they kind of, and nobody's surprised at this, or nobody doesn't know this, but they've had some very interesting contract negotiations that is now headed to a lawsuit with Kevin Schwantz, which we will eventually talk about. By the way,
yeah. Once we have the right kind of information, basically.
Yeah, it's not like we're not talking about it. And it's something that, you know, bums us out too, because we're obviously fans of Kevin and don't like to see anybody pissed off, of which he is royally. but we got to know. But the bottom line is we're going to have three GPs here next year, which to me is cool. One of the reasons why we could use donations, Franks.
Exactly.
But I did see an onboard lap from an IndyCar there, and I was like, holy shit. Crazy circuit. You know me, Jules. I love seeing races at new tracks. And so I'm looking forward to that from a strictly trackside, track-born point of view. So we'll have to see how that goes. I did mention to you, and I feel like dirt, that I have that I have yet to watch the Moto 3 race. On Saturday evening, which was Sunday morning the rest of the world's time, I said, in half an hour I'll take a nap. Well, bad idea. I woke up just as Moto 2 was getting off the line, and I haven't had a chance yet to see that, but I was up for Moto 2 and Moto GP. So Jules, I will hand Moto 3 off to you, sir.
All right. Well, you know, it wasn't a very important race.
I heard it was kind of good.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It's Moto 3. Moto 3 has been...
But can I always do this. Can I stop you for a moment?
Yeah.
The weather was shit in Sepang. On and off. So we should preface everything with that, because that's going to come into play when we talk about these races. Carry on.
Absolutely. Every, you know, you can't even say, like, the FP1 for all three series was rainy, and the other one was, because it was changing mid session for the entire freaking weekend. You know, I don't think there was a single session that stayed, you know, and this is typical Sepang. I mean, it's not like anyone was surprised.
It was Sepang times one.
Well, we know, because we had the Sepang year when we couldn't even have qualifying for MotoGP because it was so bad. So we didn't quite get to that point, but as in terms of variance of weather, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
Let me throw something out there, a wish. Dr. Martin Raines, if you're listening, have we had in your vast memory banks had a combinatorial MotoGP and World Superbike seasons, put them together, that have had such crap weather prior to 2012? Thank you very much, sir.
Now, I have seen the data that he puts into that database. I don't think weather is in there.
Ah, you fool.
I really don't think weather's in there. I mean, yeah, no, you know what? I only saw the writer's part of the database. So maybe there is.
I bet he's got it like down to the half hour variances. he's a madman.
He is. Yeah. But yeah, But the qualifying session for Moto 3 was dry. It was actually pretty warm.
It was cool qualifying.
What's that?
It was cool qualifying.
It was a very cool qualifying because we had Zofimi Caradine doing very well. Jonas Folger, who was doing exceptionally the entire all three factors, I believe, were led by him.
Yep.
And Sandro Cortesi was in form. So it looked like, you know, Jonas was going to get it, but, you know, home favorite. So Fabian carried in, got pole position, the first pole position by any Malaysian rider in GPs. And it was his 21st birthday. So awesome. Just an awesome day for the Fabian carried in. And the weekend wasn't even over for him yet.
Well, the cool thing was, too, on top of that, was tickets, general admission tickets. They had dropped the price. To 21 ringgit, which I believe is the Malaysian currency. Mm-hmm. And I worked that out, and that's like $8, Jules. So the place was packed.
Yeah, they packed it in. It was the biggest crowd that a motorcycle race has ever had there.
Mm-hmm.
Over 70,000 people. Because last year they hit 67, I believe.
Crazy.
Yep. And they sold even more tickets. They had to actually make more tickets for the next day because when the news went out that he got the pole position, this became the most watched race. Although there was some good stuff in Moto2.
Yes, there was.
So anyway, we had Sofiane Caradine, Jonas Folger, and Sandro Cortesi on the front row. And Louis Rossi, Louis Salom, and Miguel Oliveira on the second row, Efra Vasquez, Brad Binder, excellent, excellent qualifying from him,
mm-hmm.
and Alex Rins on the third row, and so on down the line. Of course, Vinales was not there, so he wasn't qualified. And I was actually thinking, there should be like a new, you know, have like a DNF, DNS, all these kinds of like notations. There should be like, you know, LIH, like left in Huff.
AWOL.
anyway, so we had a great race. It started off with Caradine and Folger going into the first corner. Folger ended up being the winner. You know, Jonas Folger is interesting enigma this year because. I did not. He didn't really pop up on my radar. I mean, I've heard the name many times before, and I've seen him get podiums before. I think he even won a race. No, he didn't win a race until this year, right?
I'm not sure.
But he's been in the paddock for a while, so it's he's a name that just always pops up. But the guy is freaking talented. The you finally paired with the right bike, and this is. You know, he's just shining. He's just an amazing rider. What a turnaround for his season, and it's great to see that.
Well, I mean, didn't they switch chassis or something?
Well, he switched teams.
Well, yeah, switch teams. I am such an American. Every time I hear his name, I think of coffee. It's stupid.
Folger.
Yeah.
Wow, that's actually, do they still make that stuff?
I hope not.
All right. But yeah, so Folger went into the lead, and it was him and Carradine and Cortese in his usual kind of, I'm just going to hang out and see what happens fashion, was hanging out there fourth, third, fourth. We had, who else was mixing it up there? We had, pause for effect. Oh, yeah. No, I keep forgetting. Danny Webb is number 99. It was Louis Rossi was up there. He unfortunately crashed. And we had what looked like it was going to develop into a Folger and Carradine battle. But Cortese, as he always does, suddenly picked up the pace and was with them. Then passed Folger, who did not get dropped right away, but there was a little bit of a drizzle that started to come down. I think this is like maybe 7 laps from the end.
Right. Well, I mean, key to this whole thing, obviously, was the fact that with Vinales out, the second place, the second place guy, that Cortese's job was suddenly made a lot easier.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I believe he had to finish like, first of all, as long as Luis Salom was behind him, he was champion.
Right.
As long as they both finished the race. Actually, yeah, no matter what, as long as he finished with better points than Louis Salom. So, he could have easily ridden for points. And that was kind of funny because they were going through those last few laps and you could see Cortese was backing off a little bit, even though they run very different looking bikes, they're actually the same team. Mm-hmm. So they're teammates and they know each other very well. And apparently they're very good friends. So here he is, Carradine is in front of his home crowd.
Who are going crazy.
Yeah. Every time they would hit the front straight, well, the back straight in the front straight because of the way the circuit's laid out. Massive, you could, hear the roar of the crowd. It's amazing. It was such a good thing. And I was just thinking, and it started to rain a little bit, And I was thinking, okay, call the race, just call the race. Let me have the freaking win, because I know Cortese is gonna be behind there, and I know he's gonna want to win also. The rain stopped falling. The race went on to full distance, and on the last lap, of course, mm-hmm. Cortese snipered Carradine. It was such a close finish. I believe they finished 0.28. Yeah, 0.028.
Yeah, my understanding, and I apologize, folks, for not having seen it, but Carradine had a bit of a off line approach to the final corner.
It looked like it was he got passed on the straight, in the braking zone, and Cortese was on the inside of the corner, but I thought that. Carradine actually had a better drive. He did have a better drive because he closed that gap. He just didn't close it quite enough. And so Sandro Cortese won the race and won the championship.
Yep.
And, so Fabio Carradine still, of course, walked out a hero. He has had a really tough time converting great positions to podium finishes. And he finally, really kind of nailed it. He was so close to winning the race. He has a lot to be proud of.
Yeah.
And let's face it, if Cortese had given him the race, that would have really stung.
Yep.
Because he would have known it. He would have watched it. And he would have been like, "Oh, I see."
Yeah. And there were people that were giving him stick for not letting him. They're giving Cortese stick for not letting him win. I'm like, dude.
It would have sucked for Carradine. It would have sucked for Carradine. Anyway, on the celebratory lap, Cortese, he's not like a huge, showy guy, but he did a massive smile on his face when he changed from his regular helmet to the gold championship helmet. Very clever little flag, big flag got handed to him with the number 11, which is the number he races with a big zipper in the middle. And he unzipped it, and the flag became the number 1. And he took that and rode around the track. So that was, I thought it was really clever. Very cute. Very yep. cute. So congratulations. Sandro Cortese is the first Moto3 world champion of 2012.
And he's German, by the way.
And he's German, yep. So now we had a German Moto2 champion. And now we have a Moto3 champion. And he is moving, of course, to Moto2 next year with his own special team. So we'll see how he does there with the bigger boys. But yeah, huge congrats to Sandro Cortese. I think he was a very interesting rider to watch all year. And I'm actually looking forward to the next two races because I think he's going to show the other Cortese, the little more aggressive one, since he has less to lose and loves to win.
You know, you just said something, Jules, that triggered a weird thing in me because yeah. I finally, over the last couple of days, have started to get into the, oh shit, the season's winding down mode. And I'm like, oh no, there's only two races left. Yeah. The winter of our discontent. Anyway.
I know. It was like that when we were talking about superbikes at Magny Cours, yeah. too. I was like, oh shit. What's interesting, though, is that because of what we'll talk about in a sec, we are going to have, I think, each championship is going to be decided a different round, which is kind of cool.
That is cool.
You know, instead of, because there was talk, you know, mathematically, we could have had all championships, and actually at least two, decided right here at Sepang.
Math lies in GP.
Yeah, math lies. I don't think there's anything else really worth talking about about this particular race. Carradine did have the fastest lap of the race, yep. 2:15, which is pretty solid.
Yep. And a precursor of things to come. So if the crowd thought they were pumped up.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I was like, wait a minute. But wait, there's more.
But wait, it's more exactly. It's like one of those commercials. All right. So Moto2. Moto2 qualifying was also dry, but they were not so lucky with the race. Well, let's. So, in qualifying, Pol Espargaró basically has to win, and Marquez has to. I don't know what he was
13th or something.
It was 53 points.
Yeah, he had a near insurmountable lead. Yeah. And there's no doubt that Espargaró is doing his damnedest to try and it's a lot like, frankly, Jules, what we've got in GP, although the margin is obviously much thinner.
Yep.
Which is one of the reasons why, as you just said, that we're going to have the championships decided in different rounds. But after this weekend, we know a little bit more about what's going to be happening. But yeah, Espargaró, talk with qualifying. You're always so much better with this than I am.
Well, Pol Espargaró was on pole again. You know, this has become a habit, which is a good one for him. So he was on pole, but Scott Redding was second. And they, you know, Pol Espargaró ended up being almost half a second ahead of Scott Redding. And more importantly,
great lap.
Yeah, but it was mostly just that one lap. It was a very, very close fight. And Scott Redding looked like he may actually be able to get on pole. He got balked a couple of times. You know, this is Moto2, so it's very hard to get a clean lap, you know. What was interesting, of course, because of the changing weather, a lot of the riders were doing their laps early. Like Thomas Luthi, for example, who was only eighth on the grid. One of his best laps, I think, came very early.
Well, if you remember in FP3, there were guys out there in all three classes that were giving it the gas because they were remembering back what you were talking about a few years back when qualifying got canceled.
Exactly.
So FP3 was like a mini qualifying session. It was kind of weird.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's kind of what we're going to get next year in MotoGP with that kind of super Polish kind of qualifying.
And on top of that, Redding kind of had the pressure off his shoulders because they announced prior to the race weekend that he was going to be continuing with Mark VDS. So he's like, all right, well, I know what I'm doing, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's always interesting. Sometimes it really seems to release the rider from some kind of almost like a a writer's block.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it goes to show that getting involved in that stuff will stress you out. I mean, you see riders getting into, I mean, you can look all across the paddock, Jules. You can see riders having these negotiations going on, and the silly season extends further and further. Like you say, it'll stress riders out. Yeah. Across the board. Nobody is immune.
Yep. Marquez was third. The important people for this race we need to mention were Alex De Angelis, who was ninth. Let's see.
Looking.
Yeah, way down. Anthony West, who was 19th on the grid.
And some guy in a Petronas bike.
Gina Rhea, who was 22nd on the grid. And then way back in 27, some guy we never heard of named Hafiz Sayarin from the Petronas Raceline Malaysia team, which is a purely Malaysian team.
Sure.
You know, include the sponsor.
No pit board.
No, yeah, exactly. The waving hand.
Yeah.
And the race was declared wet when we came to it. Now, remember, it was starting to rain at the end of Moto 3. So we had a wet declared race as it started, and
it got wetter,
dude. It got so freaking wet.
It did.
The guy that was leading the race in the beginning was Julian Simon, who we really have not seen up front in a long time. De Angelis made it through the ranks very quickly, and by lap four he was leading the race. But it was Gina Rhea that was a huge surprise, because he came off, you know, from, well, not the huge surprise, but he you know, as we mentioned before, he was 22nd on the grid, and he was third on by the end of lap two.
Something like that, yeah. I mean, completely crazy.
Ahead of Redding, ahead of Luthi, Marquez, obviously. And then, of course, there was that greenish, strange bike that we've never seen before, number 86, who was coming through the field. Remember, he was 27th on the grid.
27th, ladies and gentlemen.
27th. And he was he caught up with the leading group by the fifth lap of this race. Now, it started to pour. And it wasn't quite pouring yet. And the other rider that was coming through, of course, was Anthony West, who loves the wet, and he hates to admit it, but he does do extremely well in wet conditions. I think all riders hate to be labeled as wet weather riders, but
I do have to laugh at how much shit that Ian Wheeler gives him, and they give it back to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, they do definitely do get that good stuff there. Gina Rhea actually ended up leading the race by lap eight, and then, you know, the Malaysians were treated to yet another to get excited about, which was that number 86, Hafiz Sayarin, took the lead, and he held that lead.
He made some passes to do that.
Oh my god!
I'm like, there's no way he is pulling that off. There is no way he's pulling that off. But at the same time, in the back of my mind was, even because, you know, we had a little bit of dryish period near the beginning of the race, I'm like, you don't go from 27th, even when the track is wet, that far without toasting your tires a little bit. But the passes that he was making, honestly, Jules, I didn't think he was going to finish the race.
No, I mean, you mean because he was going to crash as you were watching. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There was the lean angles he was pulling off, the how deep he was on the brakes. And actually, you know, I actually got that a little bit wrong. The rain tapered off, and so some of the riders were worried that they're gonna ruin their tires, and then it came back really strong, which is actually a terrible combination, because you kind of waste your tire a little bit when it starts to dry out, and then it gets really strong, because it started to pour like crazy. You know, the skies just opened up, and we had Hafiz Sayarin leading for four laps, and unfortunately then he got caught by, well, for him, unfortunately he got caught by De Angelis, and then by Gina Rhea, and then by Ant West, and ended up finishing fourth. But, you know, Oh, so the race got red flagged, but it was more than enough to declare winners. So they went back to the previous lap. I think, was there a controversy there? Now I don't remember. Shit.
Well, I mean, part of it was those last few laps. We had what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys go out as the thing was winding down.
Yeah.
So I mean, a lot like MotoGP, it was like, we better stop this.
Yeah, yeah. But what I'm saying is, was there a pass when they went back to the positions change? Wasn't Gina Rio leading?
Yeah, but I mean, there were a lot of people that were kind of confused by it. And yes, he was, but not in the prior lap. And the way that it works out is they go back to the prior lap where all the finishers cross the finish line.
Yep.
And so if they don't all, then you can't actually count that. So even if guys 1 through 24 had already crossed the line, it's not the way the rules work. It goes back to the prior completed lap. That means all competitors have crossed start finish.
Right, right. And we forgot to mention just a minor detail.
Yeah.
Mark Marquez crashed.
Oh, that, yeah. Yeah.
He was in sixth position. He was riding in sixth position.
Being dogged by?
Oh, that's right. He was actually being dogged by Mika Kallio.
No, Crazy Joe.
Oh, sorry. That's right. Was it really Crazy Joe?
It was Crazy.
Oh, yeah. You're absolutely right. It was Crazy Joe who was pushing him. But Pol Espargaró was way back in like 14th or something like that at that point.
Yeah, I mean,
15th. He was even maybe out of the points because...
All Marquez had to do was finish.
Yeah. All he had to do was finish and he would have been champion, but he crashed.
You got Crazy Joe.
And a bunch of other riders that were ahead of Pol Espargaró also crashed, and he made up his spot, so he ended up finishing 11th. Now, if he had won this race somehow, magically, you know, this was great what-ifs. If he was a great wet weather rider and stuff, but he really missed out on a monumental opportunity to make the championship close again.
Well, there's no way somebody can go from like 27th to first.
Exactly. Yep. Anyway, so obviously the Malaysians were super psyched. We had Karadin earlier on the podium with the pole position, the first Malaysian on the pole position, and then, you know, a wild card entry leading the race, finishing fourth, nothing to be ashamed of.
By far,
incredible stuff.
The total number of positions made up by the front finishers was something like 44 positions.
Oh, it's got to be more than that, dude.
There's
four riders. The Angelus went from 9th to 1st.
Yeah,
Anthony West went from 19th to 2nd.
It's a lot.
Ray went from 22nd to 3rd.
I think we were just talking about the podium maybe or something like that. Okay. Anyway, it was a shitload. It's a technical term, by the way. It's actually in the FIM rule book. Of laps that were made, or of positions that were made up, perhaps more than in a long time.
Yeah. I've never seen anything like this, actually. We've seen wet races where there are laps where people you didn't expect to be leading lead the races and even win the races, but not this many. And, you know,
I mean, let's be honest. Usually when guys come from that far back, they don't finish.
Exactly. That's exactly my point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
with the race shortened, you know, that may have helped out a little bit.
Because, well, some of them have actually had that in their strategy, is just go balls out when you see the rain coming down, because who knows how long it's going to last.
Yeah.
Obviously, though, you know, they need to do 2/3 race distance or something else will happen, which figured in later in the day. But it was brilliant for the crowd there. I mean, a packed house, 77,000 plus people got to see in the first two races. Two of their local guys just going at it. You know, that's going to completely have that place jam packed for next year.
Oh my God. Yeah. And probably a lot more wild cards.
Yeah. That'd be totally cool. Yeah. The gentleman, I'm not even trying to pronounce his name without in front of me, but he races in the Spanish CV Championship, does he not?
You mean...
Oh, you're going to try it again?
oh, you mean Sayarin?
Yeah,
he does. He races with the Spaniards. Yep. So he's not a stranger to the Moto2 bikes.
No, and apparently he rides pretty damn well in the wet.
Yep. Anyway, so moving on. Obviously, we did not have the championship decided. So nope. We're going to Australia with Marquez leading by 48.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, probably going to be a champion, crown champion in Australia, unless he doesn't finish the race.
Again.
So, right.
By the way, consider that last year in Sepang for Marquez was the end of his championship hopes.
Yeah.
When he crashed there, and Luthi went on to finish out the year, and we thought Brattle. We thought for sure, Swiss versus German, we thought for sure that that Marquez was going to be taking that on. So again, as we say, when we think things are set in stone or damn near set in stone, they're not always.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just goes to show that everybody thought that Marquez was going to have this thing wound up and to not only not get the points that he needed to keep it close, but to crash out when he was under some pressure, but not a ton from Crazy Joe. I mean, it's not like
Is a weird crash.
It was front end crash. Yeah, just over.
But it's an early front end. It's one of those crashes that I just don't understand. It must have been that he just touched the brakes a little bit too hard.
Dude was in his head. I'm telling you, I kind of can't wait till when he goes to GP next year. Right?
Oh man, it's gonna be awesome.
Talk about a pair and a team. It's probably gonna be a bit of like Colin and yeah. Anyway, So Moto2, awesome, very cool
race. And we looking forward to Australia, of course.
Indeed, and which the weather looks like it's. It looks like, and you guys that are actually there, by the time you listen to this, you'll know better than me, but it looks like FP1, FP2 may be a bit iffy, and then it's kind of who knows for the rest of the weekend. The weather reports say fair, but fair on the island could mean anything from it's raining cats and seagulls to a beautiful, hot, dry day. But the wind is always going to be a factor, and so who knows. But the way the weather's been going this year, it's... roll the dice. Who knows?
Yep. Agreed. I mean, Japan doesn't usually suffer from terrible weather. Although we had a storm one year, a very big monsoon kind of storm.
In Caparossi, win that one?
Oh yeah, yep, exactly. And but because that was this year, that was the only round we had where it was completely dry and beautiful the entire time. But Sepang, Australia, you know, we always expect wacky weather.
Yep.
Okay, so moving on to MotoGP. And the qualifying was again dry.
One thing we have to mention, obviously, is the return of Stoner to the paddock.
Well, Stoner was there in Motegi.
But he was really there. Anyway, go on.
What does it take for doing really there? He finished sixth in Motegi. All right, anyway, so yeah, but he was really back. You know, the qualifying sessions really are getting super exciting. They're getting more exciting than the races, sadly. I'm kind of psyched for the next that new qualifying format. I think I don't like rule changes that are that dramatic. You know, it's a fairly dramatic thing, and it's going to take a while for people, the teams, to get used to it, and the fans to get used to it, especially. I think it's going to be cool to see more during the free, because I like to watch all the free practice sessions.
Sure, you know? Me too.
I think it's going to put extra onus on everybody to push it a little bit more. Anyway, so but because this was another one of those great sessions that we had. Andrea Dovizioso looked like he was on pole position. We had, you know, earlier on, we had Cal Crutchlow and Ben Spies, and Casey Stoner had the fastest lap. And then they really started to drop, you know, and then it was Dovizioso again, Pedrosa. And finally, Jorge Lorenzo, you know, started pulling them out. And, you know, he doesn't surprise really with his speed, because it comes on slowly. You can see it lap after lap after lap. He just gets it better and better and better. But in this, on those last couple of laps, I mean, he just started dropping the times like crazy, because Pedrosa had already beaten the record, I believe, the previous standing record, which was Valentino Rossi's. And but then Jorge Lorenzo went, almost a quarter of a second faster still. So he was at 2 minutes and .334 seconds. Fucking A, dude.
That's right.
Hernandez was in the garage. He was there. Guess all the tickets were paid for, but he was obviously banged up from Motegi. Did not go out on the bike at all. I think he actually tried an FP1.
He did go out in FP1 and ran in that, and it was just too painful, especially in a brig.
Yep. So he was the only one that didn't start. Anyway, Lorenzo, Pedrosa, Dovizioso were the front row. Casey Stoner, Cal Crutchlow, Ben Spies on the second. Hector Barbera, not a bad qualifying for him. Stefan Bradl, Nicky Hayden on row three. Alvaro Bautista, Valentino Rossi, and Aleix Espargaró, and then Randy Lapuña, Kyle Abraham, Michele Pirro. That's a pretty damn good qualifying for Michele, because I would have expected him to be. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Silva. Yes, and Silva was last. Yeah,
but I mean, it's also Abraham slipping further and further down the grid too.
Yeah. Did I mention that Randy Lapuña was ahead of him? I don't think I said that.
I think you did.
Yeah, because again, Espargaró, Rendon, Depuny, the guys who are fighting it out for the top CRT spot.
Yep.
And you know, something that occurred to me there is it's very hard for every single point. It's so hard fought because they don't have many points to fight for. When they finish for, you know, one ahead of the other, they only get a point out of it.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So finishing races is critical, and Rendon, Depuny obviously had issues with that in Motegi, and then of course. We've had that rainy, more and more rain on, what was actually really sticks in my head was during Moto 3, they had the low angle camera in turn two.
Oh yeah. Yep.
You know, and it's like this great shot, cause you see the stands and you see them coming through the first corner and then going around, and it's a very wide angle camera. But whenever that camera panned and you saw the sky, you were just like, whoa. It is
totally.
angry looking. And of course by Moto 2 it was pouring. It was pouring in fact so hard was it Moto 2? I'm such a fucking idiot. Moto 2 was actually delayed. Both Moto 2 and Moto 3 were delayed. I mean Moto GP were delayed.
Right, correct.
Moto 2 was delayed by 45 minutes or so, and Moto GP was delayed by 15 minutes, which is pretty amazing,
right?
But they do have a cushion on each end.
Sure. Well, but at the same time, it completely screwed up some of the broadcast schedules. I mean, there were people going to their DVRs trying to watch the race, and like Motegi was on, there were some pissed off folks.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Right. So a complete space on that, but yeah, we had Moto 2 was delayed by 15 minutes, and they still only managed to. They still managed to get MotoGP only 15 minutes late. So, which is very important because it gets dark pretty fast in Malaysia.
It certainly does. And that figured later on.
Yep. Let's see. It was a Spaniard passes Spaniard kind of race again, but Jorge Lorenzo got a great start. Pedrosa got was good but not great, and. You know, they finished lap one with Lorenzo, Pedrosa, Stoner, and Bradl, and Valentino Rossi. Valentino Rossi had a great start and looked, you know, in good position to fight for a fourth with those guys.
For quite some time.
For for quite some time. And up front, Lorenzo was pulling away from Pedrosa. But not too bad. I mean, Pedrosa was kind of managing, hanging out there.
As he's actually started to learn to do.
You know, I was thinking of Motegi. No, Pedrosa was actually on Lorenzo the entire time. And it made me think that what he was really doing was he was saying, okay, look, I have the pace to beat Lorenzo. Because
I think he's finally taken a little bit of the Rossi page and is kind of enjoying hounding people. He's like, okay, I can actually stay this close to somebody and still be within my comfort window. And I think, believe it or not, and perhaps this is an extension of him stepping away from Pooch for a bit, is that he's able to actually fuck with people. He's able to actually get in their head with it, which I think has made him a more confident racer.
I totally agree. I think what he's really doing is, I mean, he also knows, because he could have easily passed Jorge earlier on, the whole point was, I'm coming into this race 28 points behind. I'm going to hound him as long as I can to get him to make a mistake, a big mistake,
and almost
so I can get a big wad of points.
Yep.
And then at some point he goes, okay, Lorenzo is his typical riding on rails. It's time for me to go. And that's exactly what happened at this race. He just was like, okay, I'm going.
Well, he found a rail nobody else had because by that time the weather was complete shit.
It was turning into crap, total crap. Yeah. And you know, he's not the best wet weather rider. He's not as bad as he made himself sound in the post race conference.
But this is
his first. Yeah, it's his first wet weather win. It is, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
In all classes, I believe, mm-hmm. not just MotoGP. So he was very happy about that, but he hasn't really sucked in the rain before. Like he's not one of those guys who just sits, you know, barely in the top 10 when it's raining.
No, but I mean, I think he's garnered a massive amount of respect this year, not only for the fact that he's doing as well as he has, but and as doggedly as he is, but because he started the season off injury free and has kept it up. Because he was taking a lot of shit over the years for, you know, guys made of glass, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. No, this has been a great year for him.
No, it has. And, you know, I mean, I'm always rooting for Pedrosa these days. It's just incredible to think, because we used to deride the poor guy so badly in the past. This is where you always can feel very superior to guys like me, Jim. because you know, you don't, your passion lies elsewhere. I used to be one of those guys, you know, in 2006 who was just like Pedro, you know, Pedro bot, all that kind of bullshit. And I actually wasn't I didn't get on the, he knocked Nicky Hayden off bandwagon, because I did see that kind of as a stupid, but still a race incident. And I was impressed with Pedrosa in that first year, but yeah. We always said, you know, he has no emotions, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't really have any racecraft, whatever.
Then you start taking close-up pictures of him. You're like, oh my God, he's smiling again, the little bastard.
Oh, dude, yeah. No. I mean, starting last year, actually 2 years ago is when I started to really go, you know, I want to see Pedrosa do better.
I'll be honest. I think it was when whatever wedge was put in, and we certainly know that Repsol/HRC said, hey, we want our rider to work with our team. And there was a little bit of pushback on Alberto Puig to step back.
Yeah.
I think that's when, to me, I could be wrong, that Danny took a step forward. Maybe not so much last year, but certainly this year.
Yeah. It kind of goes back to a little bit of the conversation we had before this call, we will not be discussing today. Anyway, but Danny Pedrosa won the race. But what was important is that this is lap 13, and Jorge Lorenzo he's obviously losing touch. What's really interesting though is that Casey Stoner is coming on. Yeah. Casey Stoner, even said after the race, he said the rain wasn't really bothering him that much. And actually, you know what? Who else wasn't bothered by the rain? Was Pedrosa. He did not. He did not have a single moment, and he was still riding a pretty good pace. I mean, his set lap times were dropping, you know, by almost a second, a lap at the end. But it was pouring.
I noticed that. And by the way, we should probably link to those really cool graphs that were on theridersfile.com.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Because those actually give you a pretty good representation of what the riders are doing
relative to each other.
Relative to each other, but also relative to the weather conditions. I extrapolated that into it when the rains really started and slacked off and stuff.
Oh, cool.
And it would actually be pretty cool to color code the chart, wouldn't it? When the rain was heaviest and whatnot, as you go across.
That'd be great.
I should put in a suggestion, but we'll definitely have a mention. And
temperature, have a temperature graph along the bottom, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But two people that I noticed were really consistent. Ben Spies was actually getting faster as the race went on until he crashed out, unfortunately, and hurt himself, as we talked about earlier.
Right.
Valentino Rossi was very consistent and was picking it up until the very, very end. But we know, obviously, with the weather and the rate, as it was two laps or one lap from the end, we know that Renzo threw his hand up.
It was on that last lap.
Yeah, but I mean, he had the moment. I mean, he basically crashed and still finished.
Yeah. He had to put his foot down. The bike went sideways to kind of shot out. It was in T15.
Yeah. I'll bet that hurt.
Oh, yeah. I know. Exactly. That's exactly what I was like. Oh, everybody who's riding a motorcycle and has had a moment like that. And they know what that feels like, you know? Yeah. And, but the thing was, Casey Stoner, if you look at that same graph that we're talking about, we will have this in the show notes because it's awesome. Yeah. Casey Stoner was absolutely level the entire, like, the distance between him and Pedrosa stayed at around, you know, 6-7 seconds, but he was catching Lorenzo fast.
I think he may have, you know, because of the situation that Casey's in and being in a recovery mode,
mm-hmm.
I think he just may have said, okay, I'm going to ride at 95%. Well, I think Casey's fully capable of riding at 95% all day, regardless of the weather conditions.
Yeah.
And if he starts that way, and leaves that extra 5% of his tires, I mean, he could do that for an extra 5 laps beyond the end of the race. It's a testament to how good a rider he is. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't fall off at all. Yeah. We definitely have to get that chart up. It's neat. I dug it.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Cool.
Yeah. The other incidents were, of course, Andrea Dovizioso crashed, but he remounted.
Mm-hmm.
He was a second crasher. He remounted and he was able to finish the race in the points because so many people crashed.
Yeah.
So even though he finished last, he still picked up 3 points, which kind of bugged me because that's the only chance I have of catching Martin in the MCN Fantasy League. Yeah, it's like I've got Lorenzo and Pedrosa. He's got Lorenzo and Dovizioso, so it's important for me to have as many points between Danny and Andrea.
Is this our MCN Fantasy League break talk time?
Oh, shut up. Shut up. We've already conceded to you, dude. Read your Twitter feed.
I don't believe you publicly put yourself down yet.
Me, personally, no. But that's because
Martin didn't.
I had no chance. I have no chance because you and I have the same exact riders left. So I concede by default.
All right.
You win, sir.
The person's at the very top of the chart. Before we get to the final of this thing, Toby Hurst. It's very interesting watching the Fantasy League. Some of you guys, if you didn't participate this year, participate next year. There's a bunch of interesting strategy involved. Toby Hurst is in our league. He's first in our league. He is first overall. But I've been looking and seeing what the other people around him have. He does not have two people that you would obviously pick, that being Lorenzo and Pedrosa. And there's only about 16 points separating him. So he's coming down to an end of the season. And there's actually a prize that's worthy of winning. Yeah. It's a Yamaha motorcycle of some sort. So he's probably gritting his teeth too. Anyway, we've completely diverged.
I promised myself I would not talk about the fantasy stuff. Martin dragged me into that last week and now I'm stuck. Anyway, back to the race. You had an interesting comment that had me salivating earlier.
Which one was that, sir?
about Jorge Lorenzo raising his hand.
Ah, yes. Well, I mean, frankly, I don't think it was on the last lap, Jules. I think he did it with two laps to go. In fact, I do know that he did it with two laps to go. And he did it in the one particular spot. It was about two turns from the end, just in a little short straight just prior to going down the back straight.
Okay.
I think it was probably raining the hardest there, which meant when it was raining pretty hard going into turn one, two, since that's on the opposite side of the grandstands. But there were a lot of people that were saying, oh, he was doing that just to keep, you know, Stoner from passing him.
Yeah. Stay in second.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
in the meantime, there are guys dropping like flies behind him. And so I don't think that's a valid deal.
Lost Cal Crutchlow, Randy Depunier, Ivan Silva, and Colin Edwards. Well, Colin Edwards was a mechanical, but
yeah.
Those four guys, or those three guys in one lap, and then Stephen Brattle again.
And we already had a demonstration of the same kind of carnage at the end of the Moto 2 race. I think it was completely, you know, people are looking for somebody to blame for whoever that they don't like at the moment. The conditions were shit. They were horrible.
Just listen to what Randy Depunier had to say about that race.
Yeah.
The conditions, they were like, he was like, that race should have been red flagged way before.
Yeah. It's a place that drains and dries really well once the rain stops. But if you're in the middle of it, you know, you remember the picture that I posted from the Tech 3 had put up 2 days before the race even started. And you could see there was a huge puddle of water at the entrance to pit lane. It's a relatively flattish track in a lot of places. I mean, flat from side to side, not a whole lot of camber. And so it tends to pool water.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason it dries fast is because it's so flipping hot. I mean, even in those conditions where you've got that kind of pounding rain, you're still talking about...
It's 80 degrees on the ground. Fahrenheit.
Or higher than that, you know, in 75.
Yeah.
There are guys that are going out in these kind of conditions and trying to decide whether they're going to wear the plastic overcovers for their leathers to keep them dry, not because they're worried about getting cold, because they don't want their leathers to turn, you know, another 10 pounds heavier. It's crazy. You know, this might be interesting. We've had a thing for a long time where very traditionally and wisely so, I believe, that we'll get some write-ins about this. I would be curious. That everybody runs basically in kangaroo suits, kangarooed or, you know, other exotic materials, or the best, of course, dead cattle. Might there be a place in the top tier for I dare not say it. It's a silly thing, but not silly because materials are changing.
Yeah.
But for a textile suit that does not absorb water. Mm. Now, I say that because the ones that we have right now, I would not want to road race in them at the top tier, or neither at the club level. I mean, we know that dead animals work really well. Sorry, you vegans out there. If you're vegan and you're watching road racing.
Millions of years of evolution, let's face it. You know,
we've
been at it for that less. Although I have to say, I've crashed in one of those Aristage suits at a very high speed,
right?
Over 90 miles an hour, and slid, and nothing. I mean, it was in the wet,
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Would you have gotten up and ridden at the same pace with the possibility of you crashing again in that same suit?
In the wet, I think I would.
You're done, crack.
because the suit protected me the same exact. Now the thing is, I would never wear such a thing in the dry, because that would have been torn 5 feet into my slide. You know, it would have been ripped to shreds.
Anyway, it's an interesting total divergence. Might there be an opportunity for the future to, in those kind of extreme conditions, to have a suit? Or part of a suit, if you will, that would not absorb things so readily, so the riders could be more comfortable and focus more on what they were doing, but that would provide equal protection. I'll bet you anything. Bet you anything. The Alpenstars and Dainese's and others of the world are working on it.
Yeah.
That was my little geek moment for the day, and we haven't even gotten to the the long awaited who's going to frickin' do it finish of the race, not to mention, wait, are we done yet?
Yeah, yeah, because we got red flagged. Obviously the red flag did come out
at 15 and 67% of the race. It wasn't quite there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So they and there was a lot of confusion about exactly how many laps were counted. Only 13 laps is counted. So we needed to have obviously 2/3 of the race completed in order for the race to be done. That did not happen.
Yep. So, and as they're trying to figure all this out, it's raining harder.
It's just getting ridiculous. Like the cars, the safety car. I think you were the one who were IMing, I believe, and you said it's the safety boat going out there.
And on top of that, because of the delay, as you mentioned earlier, they were an hour later.
Yeah. It was only 15 minutes. Actually, it's amazing that they only had to delay by 15 minutes. But anyway, the time was going. Race direction was basically saying, look, we're going to wait. We have to follow the rules. And the rules say that we're going to wait until we see that the weather's not improving. Or that the another effect, like, for example, darkness is now a threat. But otherwise, they were going to finish the race. They were going to go back out there for seven more laps, you know? I don't think anybody really wanted it, with the possible exception of Pedrosa.
I don't think anybody wanted it.
I mean, in reality, he probably...
I think the fans wanted it because they didn't leave.
They did not leave. You're right. They finally started to kind of leave when it was like, 30 minutes into the wait. Because we waited a long time.
I'm pretty sure that's because most of their cell phone batteries had died by that point.
Right. But yeah, it was amazing. People really did hang around. But in the end, I think about 45 minutes had passed, and finally race direction was like, okay, well, if we started the race now, it would be dark by the time. It would be seriously getting dark by the time. And I mean, you could just see it out there. Now, of course, the moment that they made the decision that the race was done and that the final finishing order was Danny Pedrosa, Jorge Lorenzo, Casey Stoner, Nicky Hayden,
mm-hmm.
Valentino Rossi, Alvaro Bautista, and then, of course, we had Barbara, Aleix Espargaró, James Ellison, another good one round for him, Carol Abraham, Daniela Petrucci. That's a damn good finish for him, 11th place. Michelle Pirro, and, of course, Andrea Dovizioso, who was still a good 26 seconds back from catching Michel Pirro. So he was obviously out there knowing that he could score points, and of course that paid off.
I think Espargaró is definitely leading the CRT championship
now.
He is.
Yeah. Yep. Right. So I just quickly paused there because I wanted to grab the world standings, because there was a time where Dovizioso actually had a chance of catching Casey Stoner and being in third position for the season, which would have been such an awesome achievement on the satellite team. But because of that, he did get those 3 points, but he's now 213 to 195. So that's 18 points behind Casey Stoner. It's going to be hard to make that up, especially going to Australia. Of course, Jorge Lorenzo still leads the race, but it's now in that magic, everybody likes to talk about this, the magic 25 points. Within that, it's 23 between Jorge Lorenzo and Danny Pedrosa. And Danny Pedrosa is the one on the roll. Now, of course, 23 points in two rounds is very, very difficult to make up if Jorge Lorenzo continues in the form that he's been. So,
I always wonder this. I always wonder why people assume that they look at the numbers with, three or four races to go, and they make this assumption in their head that these are the amount of points available and these are the guys that are going to get them. Mm-hmm. I never figured that out. How, I mean, we look at Sepang, we look at what happened to Marquez, we look at Sepang, we look at what almost happened to Lorenzo. Anything can happen. I mean, a race is a race. I mean,
yeah, it's totally true. You know what it is? I read this amazing article not too long ago about how human beings reason. You know, when it comes to numbers, and we're horrible at it. We're absolutely horrible at it. Our brains are completely not designed for probability. They're completely not designed to actually visualize numbers, which is why, you know, numerology exists, why we get obsessed about certain numbers, like, let's say 100, whatever. You know, it's a nice round number. What the hell does that mean? You know, so we do obsess about these things, and the magic of, obviously the magic of being under 25 points means that in one single round,
sure,
everything could turn upside down. You don't have to wait two rounds, right? That's a very short-sighted thing, because with only two rounds remaining, you know, there's just so much ground that can be made up. And bottom line is, what you say is anything can happen. We've seen it, you know, with the Moto 2 championship that was bound to be over in Sepang, and it isn't, you know,
right?
So yeah, let's leave it at that.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I'm good at QA, because I refuse to. Maybe my mind is broke. The rest of you, are all right.
Maybe.
Maybe.
All right. So, horrible job on Sepang. I apologize. I have so many notes. I think I got overwhelmed. All right. We're going to Australia this weekend. It's going to start in a few hours. We're going to start to get some news. Hopefully we'll have Braxy on the show. If we do, we'll squeeze him in here somewhere. And
if not, we'll certainly have him for the weekend.
Yep. And looking forward to hearing what Gonzalo comes up with, obviously. So we should start wrapping up the show. Any predictions for Australia? Other big bit of news was, of course, that the Phillip Island Circuit announced that they are naming Turn 3 after Casey Stoner. And there was a big ceremony. Scott Jones is there in Australia. So he took some photos, took a photo there of Casey Stoner holding out the little disc with the circuit map on it with his name on it, standing in front of a big banner that says Turn 3, Casey Stoner.
Awesome. Yeah, no, very cool. Maybe someday we can get Laguna Seca to name a corner in honor of Kenny Roberts Sr.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. All right. Should I wrap this up, Jules?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
I did want to say this. It's an interesting moment for HRC Honda, because they're going to Australia. Casey Stoner is really been working since Motegi on getting back in shape for this round. This is the round that he wants to go, win it, put it in the bag. Be done with, right?
This would be his sixth consecutive victory.
It's crazy. Crazy shit, dude. Consecutive victory at Phillip Island. And he owns that place. It's not just, you know, that he, you know, battled it out. He just owns that place. But with Danny Pedrosa having a chance to win a championship, let's say that Jorge Lorenzo has a moment. Let's say he's down in 10th position in the race. Let's say he crashes. Well, if he crashes, I think that this kind of goes out the window, but let's say he's like hovering around 10th position or something like that.
You're on the team orders thing, right?
Yeah. And you know what? I have a feeling that HRC is not going to have team orders, which is awesome. I think they're going to say, Casey Stoner, it's not a team order. Here's what we're not going to put team orders. If you can win the race, great. Support Danny Pedrosa of Valencia. Boom. Done deal. Cause I think Casey Stoner, wipe that. He's going to want to win in Valencia too. He's going to want to win the last race of his career. Let's face it.
I don't think he gives a crap about Valencia. I think he wants PI.
He obviously wants PI, but I'm just saying that he'd still want to win Valencia if he had the chance. There's no team orders.
I don't know if he's even going to show up. I think he might win PI and go, all right, I'm good.
That's an interesting point. Well, we'll see. I don't know. I think he'll race. I think he'll race at Valencia.
Okay.
He won it last year. It'd be cool way for him to end his career.
Yeah, he also ran off.
Yeah, he definitely had some bad years at Valencia too. Yeah. Anyway, this could be very intriguing to see what happens up front. I think Danny Pedrosa is very capable of winning this race if there was no Stoner.
Okay, my prediction, or at least my prediction from the fans, if you guys get this before anything starts, who, write in and let us know or post it on the Facebook fan page, who is going to be the Seagull Magnus this weekend?
There always is one. I think Bautista was last year, right?
Somebody will be it. We will have some sort of special prize. You write it. You write in. You can pick one rider, only one rider out of all the riders.
Now, what does it take? What does it take to be you have to be hit one, or do you have to hit one and crash?
You just have to. You have to contact one.
Okay.
And well, everybody that gets a rider right.
Okay.
I'll have something.
And Jim will be watching closely the entire weekend to make sure he gets this right.
No, I will have my squadron of loyal Moto Pod listeners out there making sure that I don't fuck up again.
Nice.
All right. Let's put this baby to bed. I think it's a little bit tired.
Yep.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury. Oh, I did last week or 2 weeks ago. Anyway, thank you for downloading Motopod. Totally appreciate it. Thanks for listening to our inane rambles. This is what happens when we do things for you and me, Jules. It's just past midnight. It's already tomorrow.
Yeah.
We hope you will listen again. Looking forward to Phillip Island this weekend. If you guys would like to make sure, because Jules, I know we want to get you to PI next year, or me off to Russia, or perhaps back to the Isle of Man. We can always use some help. In fact, the till has been quite empty pretty much for the month of October. So if you can give us a hand, that would be great.
What Jim is saying is give us money.
It would be very helpful. I'm not saying that from a begging standpoint. I'm saying that from if you guys want to get some great content and have us at the track, it would be extremely helpful. Otherwise, we'll be doing things remotely and unfortunately not getting as much good content as we can. Regardless, we will still be here, still doing shows. So that's a cool thing. Should have some great interviews from this weekend. And I am off to hunt down the one man with more manic hair than I am, that I have in the broadcast journalism industry, that being one Mr. Mark Brax. So, Jules,
righteous.
I will say adieu.
All right.
And I will talk to you soon.
All right, man. Have a good night.
Good night. Good weekend. Let's have a good, safe weekend of racing.
Joy. Ciao.
Cheers.